My name is Zhao Ying Summers. Don't worry about pronouncing Zhao Ying. My iPhone auto correct Zhao Ying to annoying. People also ask me, why don't you have a Chinese last name? I had one before I got married. I was a hoe.
The Buzzcocks, right at the height of punk rock, Sex Pistols, Clash, the catchiest. Even when my daughter was a little baby, she just thought their stuff was, because it's just bouncy. And you can almost feel the disgust in their voice. Like, I want to be punk so bad, but I wrote this great riff. What am I going to do? You know, so that kind of, some people can't help it.
They can't help.
That's what they write. They write catchy tunes. It's not their fault.
Yeah, it's like there's a poet in your mind. You rhyme. You like it. It has to, or you don't. You can't come. You're like, I can't come for 2 months. Let me just go back to basic.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, guys. I'm Jillian Summers. Welcome to the Tiger Milk Podcast. Today is very special. I'm wearing red to celebrate the 50th episode of Tiger Milk Podcast. I mean, I cannot keep a husband for 50 days, but this is keep going and it's stronger. I have my idol on my podcast. I just cannot describe how kind he is. I met him at a show in the Valley. Yes, God was in the Valley. It was very nice. And I was able to watch him live for the first time. And I was shocking. He was wearing a mask. Because he's really protective of his energy, and I just kind of follow him around like a Chinese secret service agent. And but he has been amazing, supportive to me and to everybody in comedy, and it's my absolute honor to welcome the one and the only Patton Oswalt. Sorry.
That's quite all right. Hi.
I'm blocking everybody on my phone because I'm important now.
Oh, really?
Our conversation.
Are you at blocking stage now? Congratulations.
Yes, I'm blocking all my all people who hate me and make fun of me, because as a Chinese woman, the way I grew up is that you know, it's very normal for your parents to verbally abuse you because they care about you. Like, oh, you are not smart enough. You know, you are not pretty enough. It's like a very Eastern Asian.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind, in America, when we verbally abuse you, it's not because we care about you.
I didn't know that.
No, it's because we're bored and we hate ourselves and we need someone to punch down on.
I really found that out because I was, I said yes to my fiancé proposing to me because he told me one day, he said, you know what, you lost your looks. I'm like, you think I used to have looks? Yeah,
and that's how he. Oh,
yes,
he had you at you lost your looks.
I'm like, he thinks I used to have looks.
So I got
my mom never thought I ever had looks.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'm just so glad that you're at the you need to block people stage. That's a sign of success in America when you have to start blocking people.
I think so.
You've hit the next level.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm so happy you are here.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to have you here. You're like, I mean, everybody loves you. You are the very few comedian that everybody loves.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's some, okay, yeah, everyone loves me.
They do, and I hate to be the person who is gonna talk shit, but you know, I translate the Chinese meaning of English names. I wrote English names.
Uh-huh.
So pattern in Chinese, pattern in Chinese means pattern. Pa means afraid, teng means pain. So pattern means I'm afraid of pain. So are you a pussy when it comes to pain?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Hang on. My name in Chinese is I'm Afraid of Pain?
Yes.
Okay, first off, that's my next album title. That's my next special title, I'm Afraid of Pain. It's weird that you bring that up because I am in an insane amount of pain right now. I had some dental stuff done a couple weeks ago and something clearly went wrong.
Uh-oh.
Because it's really, really hurting and I get these weird jabbing headaches. But here's what's weird. They cannot see me until 2 o'clock today. That was the first time. So it was, and I called them on Thursday. So I've been in this weird Zen zone where it's like, I can do nothing about this until next Monday. So I just have to live with it. It was weirdly freeing knowing that there was no other relief until Monday at 2 o'clock. So wow. just eat the pain. And I hate pain.
I'm
terrified of it.
I just, I love pain because I was born, you know, as a girl during the one-child policy. And my mom just, she told me at the get-go, she's like, oh, I did not bring you back for A minus. So like, I have to get A plus. And whenever I don't get it, she'll make sure I understand why. And I remember when I was having my own children, I was having my son, and I told the doctor, I don't want any pain management. I don't want any epidural. I want to feel the pain. So,
oh God.
So when I verbally abuse my son, I can look into his eyes and say, I suffered for you. Now you're going to listen to me. Because if you have pain management, like, you didn't really do anything. So you, when you abuse your kid, like, how can you justify for that?
So you, hang on. You avoided getting an epidural so that you'd have something over your son when you guys were getting into fights.
Yes.
Wow, that's long-term planning.
I know.
You're in it for the long game.
I'm waiting for him and my daughter to turn 14 and gave me the side eye and arrow.
You've got what, 2 years old and 4 years old?
Yes.
I have 14. You still have cuddly cutie mommy.
Yeah.
I now have the, hey, ask me how school was.
How was school?
It's fine.
Did something upset you?
What? No. You know what's upsetting me? You. You ask me if I'm upset. That's what's upsetting me.
I love you, baby.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, love you too. So get ready for that.
Sounds like my ex-husband.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, maybe you're ready for it.
Teenagers, they are like an abusive relationship, like a romantic relationship. Like,
oh my God, wait a minute. Teenagers are like an abusive spouse.
Yes, teenagers? Yeah.
Because you gotta love them.
Yeah.
Except with an abusive spouse, you're like, well, this isn't going anywhere. I can leave it. But with the teenager, you're like, I have to stick this out. I got to be on the other side of this, because you're hoping for them to go, hey, I was such a dick when I was.
Yes.
Because I have since said to my parents, hey, I know what a douchebag I was. I'm really sorry. I can't believe you guys stuck with me. Thank you. And I'm hoping my daughter does the same thing, even though she's completely cool. She's not being mean to be mean. Everything that she's upset about is actually weirdly legit, you know, in terms of just, if I was 14 years old in the world right now, seeing how the adults were running things, I would take everything an adult said to me with a grain of salt. I wouldn't trust a friggin' thing that adults said to me.
Yeah, their mind is still fresh and sharp, not conditioned like ours.
Yeah, and they can see, they can see what's going on.
Yeah.
They see how insane everything is, so of course you'd be like, wait a minute, don't tell me what to do.
I know.
How about let me do this, because you guys seem to have screwed all this up.
Yeah, you guys ruined everything. I think they're probably like shocked by how crazy and stupid we are. I can't imagine, it's so heartbroken, you know, Hamas attacked Israel.
Yeah.
It's exactly on the 50th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War. It was 19.
Oh, I didn't know it was on the 50th anniversary. It was
right the day after. It's so brutal. And
I just remember seeing, I'm just now seeing a lot of, because again, I was traveling all weekend, so I didn't really have, this sounds so lame, but it's true. I didn't have great cell phone service where I was. So we live in a world now where if you're not in a solid Wi-Fi area, you're not going to be that up on the news as you should be.
Yeah.
So I was getting it all yesterday and today. And like the footage of there was like an outdoor music festival, like a Coachella.
In the desert, yeah.
And as people are out there just like listening to beats and walking around, there's like rockets arcing over, but they don't realize they're coming for them yet. Like I thought the crowd would be reacting and terrified, and it's like, no, that comes later. That's what's so sinister, is when you see, we're in a world now where there is so much tension that I think we don't react quickly enough to danger anymore because we're so used to it.
Yes, I think so.
It's weird.
It's really sad when some like beautiful young people enjoying music in the desert, and you know, Jewish people are celebrating Yom Kippur about gathering together, about love, and that is the moment they choose to attack.
Yeah, maybe that's why I think a lot of people that are younger these days, and I don't want, you know, again, I don't want to speak for the young generation, because I hated that when people did that when I was in my 20s, but we're taking away young people, and I mean everyone, Israelis, Palestinians, American kids, especially African-American kids, you're supposed to have really goofy, stupid, carefree years when you're 20. You're supposed to be doing dumb things and recovering from mistakes, and it's like we're taking that away from them. We're taking away all the wiggle room to have goofy, pointless years in your 20s. And we're raising this generation because of all of our screw-ups. They're so protective because one fatal error, one wrong tweet, one wrong thing, is it just destroys your life. So now all of the, like, one thing I got growing up was there weren't cameras on me all the time, and I was doing the stupidest shit you could think of, and because you're supposed to be able to do that when you're young.
Yes.
But now every second's being recorded, so I think that makes everyone super tense all the time.
They are super tense, and I really felt that there should be rooms for us to make some mistakes and understand yes. why we should not think that way and say that way and learn compassion. Because yeah. people learn, like young people, some people, they say stupid things because they don't have a passport. They don't know the yeah. world is not about them. And one day yes. they will, but they will be canceled forever. They can't have a job because they said, oh, go back to China. I hate that. But if somebody who's 16 in Kentucky, a little boy who lived in a trailer told me that, like then he went to China, he met a Chinese girl, he got married, he had a baby, but he can't find a job anymore because he was racist to me.
Right,
I just really feel like we should have room for young people to make mistakes, not like the horrible ones, but...
Yeah, you shouldn't be allowed to murder people, but you should be allowed to say dumb shit.
Yes.
And then wait a couple years and go, oh, wow, hey, sorry about... You also, there's because of that, there seems to be a reaction now, and I totally understand it, which is, I will never apologize for anything, because that's the only stance you can take.
Yeah.
Because we don't let people apologize anymore. When you do apologize, people are like, that's not enough. And then they get on you even harder. So now people are so, let people screw up and then let people come out and go, hey, did I totally screw up, you know?
Yeah.
Drew Barrymore completely screwed up that whole WGA thing. And then yeah. she was like, hey, I didn't have enough information. Now I have more information and I'm sorry. I completely screwed up. Like, good for her.
Yes.
You know, you're allowed to make those screw ups.
I love when she did that. She didn't have any makeup on. It's brilliant. It's just so wonderful.
That's when you knew she was serious.
Yeah, she's serious. Like, you are going to see me with no makeup on and I don't care because I feel bad.
You've done something horrible.
I wasn't an asshole.
So when I see you without makeup, like, you've murdered somebody. When you're on TV without any makeup, you're like, oh, Jayon did something really serious.
Well, first of all, Patton, you would think that was Bobby Lee. If I don't have makeup on, I'm Bobby Lee or a young
Bobby
Jackie Chan.
Lee.
Then you're like, oh, that's she's Zhao Ying. It's a gender issue. That's why Asian women wear makeup. I don't have lashes on. I'm a man.
Yeah.
I really feel like a man.
Yeah.
I should not wear it because I can get paid more.
There you go.
Be smart.
Smart. Yeah, I there really needs to be the wilderness years for youth. We need to bring back wilderness years where you do dumb shit and you don't pay for it.
I really think so.
That they need that. It was really telling when, do you remember when AOC, Octavia Cortez, Alexandria Octavia Cortez, that film leaked of her in college and she's on a rooftop with a bunch of friends and the music's playing and she's dancing around like a goofball and laughing and drinking with all of her friends. And there were these younger, like, especially young right-wing people. And I don't even blame them for doing this because it's how they're conditioned. They were like, that's it. She's over. Her career's over with. Because they have been taught to, you are always grinding. You are always serious. And it's like, no, she was doing what normal kids do when you're in college. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And there's this generation that doesn't hang out with friends, doesn't have pointless days. You're supposed to have pointless days.
Yes.
And we're conditioning these kids like, you got to be grinding all the time. You got to monetize everything. No days off. No, you need weeks off to just go do the dumbest, most pointless stuff that has nothing to do with your career or your life.
That's so true.
Because that will make you a better person.
Yeah.
So the fact that they thought, my God, it's over for her, but then everyone my age, it's amazing footage. She looks gorgeous and cute. You're like, I don't have any footage like that of me when I was that age. I would kill to have that footage. And B, there's a generation that thinks you should not be just goofing around some days. And you absolutely should be goofing around.
You need those days. If you are always grinding, always just focused on doing a thing, it's like, it's Nazi. Like, where is...
But also your work after a while stops being fun and no one wants – if you're grinding all the time, then your work is just about talking about doing the work and there's nothing – you're not being surprised by anything that you're doing. So no one watching you is going to be surprised by anything.
There's no life behind it.
There's no – and that's – especially now with as great as if you're a young comedian now and you have, you know, your phone and you have access to social media so you can get yourself, that's great. I'm glad that there's so many more voices. But the thing that these young comedians don't have is those years where no one's watching you and you can try on different personas, try different bits that don't work, figure out who the hell you are. You can ape other people and go, yeah, I mean, I love that voice, but that's ultimately not my voice. Because, I mean, I had the first 8 years of my career, there was no cameras on me. There's no footage. It was just me on the road trying shit out. Some of it was working. Some of it was working that shouldn't have been working. That was really hacky, awful shit. And then when I moved to San Francisco, I went on stage at the Holy City Zoo and my hacky road shit that killed ate it all of a sudden. And I realized, oh, I've got to redo what I'm doing. This is bad. And luckily, nobody filmed any of it.
That's amazing.
I really lucked out.
I really felt that because all of the young comedians, if they blow up on social media, they watch carefully, say everything that is the right thing to say.
Yes.
That's why a lot of comedians have the same voice. Because
yes.
That's a voice who's going to get you booked a job, don't get you canceled. And there's nothing
yeah.
more than that.
Yeah,
because
you're right.
Afraid to take any risk.
They do have the same voice because it's that very calculated, trained social media voice, how to say edgy stuff without actually being edgy or taking any risks. You're right. They all have, there's a weird underlying voice that they've all learned.
Yes.
I think that it feels like to me there's going to be a weird rebellion against that from whatever generation comes next, Generation Alpha, whatever comes after Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a weird rebellion where there'll be a generation of people that their whole thing is, you can't find me online. I am not on, you have to either come see me live or you can never see me. And that will be their mystique.
Wow.
Is that there's no, they'll maybe all the, or they'll have a website, but it'll just be lists of dates. There'll be no footage. There'll be nothing. And you got to go experience them live and that's it. And they'll have like one of those cell phone blockers so you can't take any footage of them.
Yeah.
And it'll all, somebody will build a massive career being completely word of mouth. You either experience it or you don't. And that will be their hook is that, oh, no, I saw them live. You can try to describe their music or their bits, but you can't just type their name into YouTube and watch them.
Wow, they'll call them the young Patton of the secret 80s.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll call themselves the unwired or the unbroadcasted.
That's
cool. But they'll be, I feel like, and Gen Z is so, look, first off, I'm not putting anyone down for being online. I see what people do on Instagram and TikTok. Just the cinematic techniques they're doing are beautiful. The way that
yeah.
people promote themselves, the short films that like the way that Bert Kreischer puts together movies and footage of himself on Instagram, it's really well done. I don't know how to do that. I'm trying to learn, but there will be a reaction to that. There will be someone, it'll either be a musician or a comedian that it'll become known you have to go see them live and that's it.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's
yeah.
no social media accounts.
Yeah.
There's
and like maybe they'll do like one
Yellow Book. You find them on Yellow Book.
You have to actually they have to reprint the Yellow Pages
yeah,
just
yellow
to
pages.
Find them.
Yeah.
And they'll like once every few years they'll do like one special and that will truly be in the sense of a word, a special, because you don't get one every year from them.
Yes.
You get one every few years, and it's truly amazing, and then they're gone.
They put a special back into special.
Yes. That's. I'm going to cough. I'm going to cough really quick. Hang on. I want to
do it real
quick. It's
really I gave him COVID. Sorry, guys.
yeah, that's one thing. Right now, there's a lot of platforms that they're doing. I think they're putting out way too many stand-up specials,
yeah.
and like you said, the word doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
You know, let the thing be an event when it drops rather than, oh, okay, it's another 8 months, here they are.
Yeah, it's,
you know?
I just felt people, they have this well-calculated social media voice. It sounds kind of edgy, but they are not edgy, and they also...
I never thought of it that way yet, right? There is this new...
Fake edgy.
There's a fake edgy voice, but now that I think about it, a lot of them... And again, a lot of them don't mean to do it. A lot of them, they are talking from what they think their authentic voice is.
Mm-hmm.
I was, look, during the 80s and 90s, I was talking from what I thought was my authentic voice. And it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco that I realized I was doing that comedy club rhythm. But I had fooled myself into thinking, I'm actually talking like, and it wasn't until I gave that up and really started talking like myself that I broke through.
That's amazing.
Wow, I never thought of it. Yeah, there's just another accepted language out there. But now instead of like the cable TV comedy club language, it's the social media rhythm.
Yes.
It's the social media language.
They use a lot of catchy titles. Catchy
yes.
titles, but they don't actually believe in the title they say to get people to click, like clickbaits.
Yes, exactly.
They don't say
oh
anything
my God.
Meaningful. They just say like, they don't even have a punchline.
Yeah.
They just quote the thing, be like, huh? And
yeah.
that's go viral.
Yeah, how many like YouTube videos, and they'll use like the screenshot with the giant words like, you won't believe this. And
yes.
then you click it and they're just talking about the most. And some of it's funny, but it's like, don't put that title on it because you're gonna teach people to be disappointed in your shit.
Yeah, like a guy was like, you don't believe this. You won't believe this on the pants. Like he's going to have the best dick in the world. Then you're like, what? Where is it? Like,
it's, yeah.
it's better to not.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that the one of the advantage of social media that I took off is that when I start comedy, mm-hmm. I just had my first baby, my son. And it was 2019, December.
Oh, Lord.
2020, I opened a comedy club because I want to get on stage for like more than 10,000 hours. And it's impossible as a young comedian. Nobody wants you on stage. You keep sucking.
You were raising a baby and you would open a comedy club.
Yeah, but that's also like I don't have to see my husband at night. I can go to the club. That's how much I hate him.
There you go. That's smart.
So I bought a club.
That's dedication.
The first month, yeah, that's why like an unsupportive husband can make you successful because you don't want to see him. You've spent 20 hours in the club doing your thing. I got so lucky because I have the Chinese business brain in me, you know.
Yeah,
I just like you can't have a voice without 10,000 hours.
There, you, and you also had that. There is nothing negative that you can throw at me that I will not turn into an advantage.
Exactly.
Like unsupportive husband. Okay, that's going to be anger fuel, and that'll just I'll use it that way.
Yes, so I can be at a club all day. And I bought a club, and 2 months later the pandemic came. And
holy shit! I don't mean to be laughing.
It's on Melrose.
You're like. Yeah. Had a baby in December of 2019. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, I already see it coming. Like, how many stories are going to be that? So we bought a house in February of 2020. Oh, God, here we go. Like, so it was just a series of disasters.
Disaster. Yeah, disaster. I just, you know, I want to keep the club. I go there every day, talk to the empty wall for hours. I just write my jokes. And I'm like, how can I do this? Then I said, you know what? I'll post every single joke on TikTok. It was very bad. I have 2 followers and people said, we don't understand what you're saying. So I just keep posting and then I would write 20 jokes. I'll post 5 or 6, make them video. And then some jokes go viral after 1 month or two. Mm-hmm. And the jokes that goes viral is only the topic that's actually authentic. It's me talking about me born a girl as a one child policy in China. And
that's always the stuff that
only the
pushes
thing that
through
my heart.
Exactly. When you start talking about the stuff that A, you're like, I there's no way I can make this funny.
Yeah.
That is the stuff that makes people stop for a second and go, oh, wait, what is this? Because it's not, like you said, it's not in the, and I bet.
There's nothing cool about all the painful thing about
no.
me.
And I bet subconsciously, because you're actually talking about something real, you lost the social media voice that everyone else uses because you can't use that voice when you're talking about it. It has to be come out very real and it really stops people short and goes, oh, what the hell is she talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I start recognizing videos start going viral and only material that go viral is me about my life, my marriage, my child, mm-hmm. how I was raised, the Chinese parenting versus the American parenting, dating
oh,
in
boy.
Asia versus dating in America. The beauty standard in East Asia is very toxic, as well as
oh,
the
really?
Beauty standard in America is also toxic. Like in Asia, they want the pale skin, light skin. Like as all the girls have the light skin because if you have dark skin, means you are too poor, you work at the farm. But in America, you are not tanned. You are too broke to go to vacation.
Oh my God.
It's so, I said, you are hot
oh
somewhere.
Oh God, that's so weird.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, you are hot somewhere. You know, if you are not hot in America, it's their fault. You go to China, you are the queen. If you are ugly in China, go to America. You know, you are, it's just the, all the things that went viral are the things that connect to me. So I only continue to write and work on the jokes that have more than 1 million views. And I found my voice in 3 years. It's because everything that worked connecting with the audience, social media showed me where it is. Normally, it take at least take 8 years to really find your voice as a young comedian. The first 6 years, you just let the garbage out. I did like let my garbage out, polluting a million of people. But like the thing that worked was the thing that actually touched people's heart, and I started writing those materials, and I built my materials.
That's an advantage of social media that
that's
I hadn't
one,
thought of.
I think.
You just said the clicks and views will show you what's working and what isn't.
What's connecting.
Yeah, exactly. That and that's a harsh shortcut. Because
yes.
When you put something out there and in months and there's three views, you're like, okay.
They will tell you you should die.
Don't go down that road. They don't want to hear
how bad you are. Like people on social media tell me all the bullshit. Like my mom, as a Chinese mom, she's so mentally verbally abusive. Everything that my fans say, it just doesn't hurt me because I'm just like, my mom would say the worst. So
right.
I'm bulletproof with social media.
You're like,
nothing
guys,
hurt me.
I trained to fight 15 rounds and you're fighting me for three.
Yes.
It doesn't affect me.
People are like, oh, she used to be skinny before she had the babies. I was like, you think I used to be skinny? Oh my God. Let me send you flowers. It's so sweet. My mom's just always like, you're so ugly. But she would die for me. But she want me to die. But she would die. She would do anything for you.
She would do anything for you, but she also hates you and thinks you're ugly.
I know. I really think that, you know, Asian women live forever. I think there's a secret behind the Asian woman's longevity is that, you know, when they are 100 years old, they wake up in the morning. They're like, I should die. You know, it's enough. I have everything. But then they're like, I want to hear the bird singing. But I want to see my daughter's face and hold her and tell her you are fat and ugly one more time. And then next day, she still wants to say the same thing. She's like, I really want to tell her that. Then she's
right.
like, I'm going to live. So I can tell her.
She wakes up and goes, what if she had ice cream last night and she's all bloated? I gotta go see her really quick. Just gotta make sure. Wow. Hey, if you're watching out there, you wanna live a long time, hate your children.
Yes.
That will give you the power to live for a century.
Yes.
Wow.
It drives you to move forward. It's like you are on a wheelchair, but like I wanna walk to my daughter in her house and tell her, how dare you? Like, why are you such a loser? You never had a son. You should have a son.
So wait, does your mom still lives in China or she lives
here?
She
moved here because after my husband and I got a divorce, I got my children. Mm-hmm. I want the children. I didn't get any money, but I got the kids. Don't do that.
No.
No.
I could tell you that. Don't do that.
So my mom moved here to help me with the kids.
Oh, nice.
She's like, I told you. He's going to leave. I told you.
Wait a minute. You just gave her an extra 10 years of life.
I know. She's so gonna, vibrant.
Did I tell you?
She's so happy. She's thriving now. She's learning English. She's like, I just don't think it's fair if I cannot abuse your English too. I want to learn English. I'm like, that's more material for me, mom. So she's learning English now.
Aww.
She's like, F-A-T, you're fat. I'm like, good, mom.
Wait a minute. She's not doing any of that to the kids, though.
She loves them. And uh-huh. She thinks they are brilliant because she's like, can you imagine you've been learning English for 30 years, you still don't speak English. Your daughter's two. She speaks perfect English. As a mom, she is born here. She's American. She speaks English. Just means she's not a moron. Nothing. There's nothing special.
Yeah. That's She's a normal American kid.
I was like, you're a hater. You're a bitter. She's smarter than you. You're not. It's okay.
So wait, does your mom live with you or she lives nearby?
She lives in the house together with me. And she watches the kids for me when I'm touring, which is amazing. A godsend. Like, I can trust her with the kids.
Oh, that's got to be great.
She does. She likes them. It skips a generation when it comes to I think Asian moms. Because when she was born, her father died when she was six. And she had four brothers. They are more important than her. There's no money for her to go to school. So it was very sexist. So she was starving. She was hungry. When she see me, she want me to accomplish all the dreams she had as a little girl. She didn't understand I have my own dreams too. But for her, it's like, you are dying. We are hungry. Women have no power. Now you can study, you know, be a doctor, learn finance, you know, take care of yourself. She didn't understand I want my life. But she thinks she loves me. She wants me to have power and do the right thing. But
more vengeance. God, she's going to live forever.
I know.
She's got the... She about your marriage collapsing, the seeing you do what she didn't do, still calling you fat. She's never gonna die.
She's never gonna die. She was so happy when I got divorced. She's like, I knew it. She's smiling. I'm like, mom, you're smiling.
And she's driving in LA now.
That's
nonstop hatred.
I want to alert all the Arcadia people.
Yeah, exactly.
White
she's
Mercedes
out there.
SUV. My mother is driving. We bought her license in China.
Oh God.
She's driving and she's really strong. And I think it's her, I feel like the way we were able to forgive each other. Mm-hmm. I felt like my mother never had a childhood. My father is also an alcoholic. Mm. He's never been sober. I got sober. I've been sober for 5 months.
You used to drink and then...
I used to drink. And nobody know I have a problem, but I know.
You were able to hide it.
I was able to hide it, but not to my kids, because as a working mom comedian, you can't sleep until 2 p.m. You wake up at 7:30.
Yes, exactly.
You fight the hangover. It's a war. I can't do it anymore. I have to choose to be sober for them, to be there for them, or, you know, just to keep going on. But I know I cannot hide it anymore because it is in my DNA. My father, my uncle,
it's waiting.
Non-functioning.
It's waiting. Yeah.
So I got sober. It's been very hard the first 2 months, but now it's good.
I'm very lucky in that A, I love to drink, but B, as I've gotten older, my tolerance for alcohol hasn't gone up. Like I can, you know, enjoy a glass of wine, but the hangovers are 10 times worse. So it's like my body has decided, yeah, you're going to just drink way less because you can't, like, a glass of wine will give me a raging hangover the next day. And yes. I used to be able to kill a bottle easy. And now,
aging is good for us.
Yes, exactly. Your body's like, well, when I got, you know, I had to cancel because I had COVID. I got COVID the second time. This is a couple weeks ago. And my body just said, you're going to, like, I was like, well, I got to stay in, but I'm going to read and I'm going to get some running done. And I couldn't even concentrate on that. Like, my body made my brain shut down because it was like, no, you're going to lie down and do nothing so I can fix this shit. Like, I'm running this now. You're not in your 20s anymore. You're no more multitasking. If I have something to do, you're going to lie down while I do it.
I love that.
Good to listen to your body when it does that.
The aging is good. Now, what turns me on is taking a nap. I can take a nap. I took a nap
this morning.
It's beautiful.
I got up at 5:30, made my daughter breakfast, took her to the bus stop, came home. I went on like a very, very short walk. Then I took my wife to breakfast. And then when I came home, I'm like, well, I got to leave at 11. It's 9:30 now. I'm going to take a 1 hour nap. And I was very excited to take my nap.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love naps.
Yes. It's good for the body. It's very good for the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to, anyone watching this, this tea is delicious. Every time you see me sip it, a spike of pain goes up into my skull, but it's very tasty. So just know I'm drinking this so that I can stay alert and bubbly with Young, but also I'm slowly killing myself with pain, but at 2 o'clock, I'll have the needles in me, and hopefully I'll be okay.
I'm so excited about
what is it? I don't like pain. What does my name need?
I'm afraid of pain.
I'm afraid of pain.
That's true. That's true, Patton. That's your real name.
I'm afraid of pain. Oh, there it is. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
I want to ask this question on behalf of my friend Michael Gizer. So how do you combine your brilliant comedy with observing the universe? Like, it's the most difficult thing. To make a very ordinary story as funny as the way you tell it.
Well, I mean, that wasn't a thing that I started off with. I started off very much trying to write jokes. And I can promise any comedian watching that being able to just go up and talk about this thing happened today and here's something that just comes from going on stage all the time until you're so comfortable up there that you can even tell the audience. You have that energy of, oh, I don't even know if this is going to be necessarily funny, but it's going to be fascinating. And it's still, you're putting together an hour of hilarity and fascination and interest. So I've gotten beyond that point of like, I want to laugh every 2 seconds. Like, I can talk for a bit and still make it interesting. You know, like I was just in, and that's not a brag. That, again, that comes from me doing this for 30 plus years. And also it comes from, and you'll start to notice this too, I'm sure you are starting to notice this now, where the most frustrating days of your life or the most annoying or angering moments, your comedy brain will kick in and go, but from the outside, this is really funny.
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking at this from the outside, this is actually kind of funny what's going on right now. And so I've learned to recognize those moments. I've been very lucky. Some moments have literally been handed to me where I didn't even need to change the story. It's just like, well, I'm going to tell this friggin' story because this is insane. There's other ones where you don't realize that it's something funny until you look at it from that outsider angle and realize, oh, there's a whole, oh my, and it, nothing connects with an audience more than, let me tell you the story about this stupid fucking thing I did. Oh my God. Like, and especially when a story about how you think you're being the smart one or you think you're being the clever one. And then you realize halfway through, like, oh wow, I'm an idiot. But that just comes from time over and over and over again, just talking about your life, talking about stuff.
You earn the power of being the vessel of comedy from all the talent, all the hard work over the years. You become the vessel. You have to learn and earn that.
And you have to learn to believe in yourself. There's a great comedian I used to work with in DC. I think he lives in New York now, named Tony Woods.
Oh, I was just with Tony Woods at the stand on the same show.
He's great.
Literally, I said, do people confused with Tony Rock? He's like, no, I'm
Tony
Woods.
Tony Woods.
I keep grow.
Yeah.
Tony Woods was adorable.
Yeah, and he is just one of those most confident people, like just can go on stage and start talking about. And I remember he was going to a gig, a friend of mine, Jeff Hatz, we were driving to a gig. And that day, Tony Woods had this really ugly fight with his girlfriend, who was also his baby mama. And there was all this, like, someone threw something. And it was kind of an ugly story, but it was also crazy. And Tony was telling Jeff, like, yeah, I'm going to talk. And he's talking about how I'm going to talk about this fight that I just had tonight. And then Jeff said, how are you going to make that funny? Because it was a really dark story. And then Tony went, I'm a funny motherfucker, man. And as yes, that's very, there's ego in there, but it's true. Like, if you are funny, you can, there's plenty of intelligent people that have funny things happen to them and they'll talk about it and it's not funny because they don't know how to be funny.
Pardon, do you think it's musical for comedians, for comedians with a gift? Joan Rivers said that it's like musicians, they have music in their brain.
Yes.
Funny people, it's like a poet,
you look for the moments.
Their words.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when to do it, how to do it.
Yeah. I remember there was this story I was telling on stage and it happened to me and then and another person that I knew. And the person that I knew when I was done, when I told it on stage, I didn't tell it exactly as it happened. I just hit the points that are going to be the funny parts and illustrate. And they're like, but you left out this. And I'm like, the audience doesn't care about that. Like, they're not here to hear every detail. What are the funny parts of this that actually happened and then illustrate a much bigger point about humanity rather than, you know.
Taking notes.
Yeah, exactly. But if something funny happens, just rush to the part that's funny. Don't go, so yesterday I was going to go to Disneyland. So at 8 a.m., we packed up the car. And then what I did, I put the, like, none of that mattered. Just when does the funny stuff start happening? Start there.
I just feel like the power of humor, it is so great. I felt that if Hillary had 1% of Bill Clinton's humor, she will be the president. There is no doubt.
Yes, but you know what? Where do you bring that up? Okay. I think that she had a similar problem to Obama in that because she's the first, she's be the first, she's so in her head. And yes, she is not the most loosey-goosey person. I've met her a couple times. She's really, really nice. But because she is this, I'm the first one around the track, I've got to double and triple think everything because everyone's going to jump on my shit. If I make a mistake, you know, a guy can make a mistake and go, yeah, I fucked up, blah. And if she does, it's emblematic of all women and like having that shit on your head.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with Obama. And there was something really illustrative. I knew when Obama was going to become president in 2008. And the moment I knew was during, you ever see the thing called the Alfred Smith dinner where before the election, both candidates, they get together and they kind of roast each other. It's this tradition.
Yeah.
And so it was Barack Obama and John McCain. And Barack went up and he was okay, but he was very stiff and he was really, you could tell he was thinking through every joke and really, really careful. And then John McCain went up and annihilated. He was so loose and hilarious and making fun of himself and making fun of his campaign and making fun of Palin. The election hasn't happened. And he's just, you know, and I realize, oh, he's looked at the numbers. He knows he's going to lose. That's why he's so loose and comfortable. And Barack is like, I could win, but I could still fuck this up. So he's being really nervous. You never have a better set as a comedian on nights when it doesn't matter. Like when you go up and they're like, the Conan people are looking at you, the Netflix people are here, that, you know, whatever, or if there's somebody famous in the room that you want to impress, you think everything way too much. But if it's a random Tuesday night and maybe the crowd isn't even that good and you just go up and you're just really loose with how maybe it's not that great and you end up having this amazing set because there was nothing at stake.
Yeah.
And McCain, you should watch that.
I want to watch
Alfred Smith dinner. Obama is perfectly fine, but he's not great because and McCain is just hilarious because he's like, yeah, I ain't going to win. I can do whatever I want. And then in the following weeks, he went and popped in at SNL and did all these jokes about, he did the commemorative plate set of his failed campaign. It was like, what the? And it was hilarious. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm not going to win this thing. And he was so relaxed. And Obama did a cameo on SNL and he was stiff and it wasn't funny because he's like, I could still blow this. Mm-hmm. And McCain's like, no, I'll do whatever I want. I don't care.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I heard later on from friends of mine that were on the show at the time that, you know, when they do guest spots, little cameos, you come in early in the week and McCain, they thought McCain would come in Monday, do the little things and then come back Saturday. And he just hung out all week. He just hung out with Lauren, talked to the cast and like his people were like, hey, there's an event. And he's like, yeah, I'm good. And he would just like tell stories. And then everyone's like, he knows he's going to lose. He doesn't give a shit. Like he's so relaxed right now. So sometimes that, getting back to the Hillary thing, sometimes when there's a lot of shit at stake, it's not, I cannot tell you the times when I've shot a special and I would have killed to have used a set that I did 2 months earlier in preparing for it where it didn't matter and everything just clicked. I'm like, why wasn't that the night that I was taping? Because the night that you're taping, you're very aware, you've got the two shots, and you overthink stuff.
Yes. Okay. This is amazing advice because I will be headlining the Apollo Theater in New York City November 9th.
Holy crap.
I'm the first Chinese person to do that. And I will just think I'm just doing people's nails afterwards.
All right. Hang on. Is it being taped?
We are going to, it's presented by New York Comedy Festival. It won't be for my comedy special. I have my special signed, 1 hour special. I want to tape it on January, but this one is just, I wanted to run it at Apollo, see if I can tape my, I want to tape my special at the Apollo.
Excuse me. That was disgusting.
Oh, it's fine.
Here's my advice. Obviously, you're going to do sets leading up to November 9th, doing that show, right? All right, let me give you some advice. When I did my first HBO half hour, this is the best advice I ever got. I ran that set, that half hour set, every fucking night for months. And I mean every single night. I just ran that set. I ran it during the day, walking around. And I was taping it on a Friday in San Francisco. So the Wednesday, I went up at the Punchline and ran my half hour, and it just didn't work. And this was a set that I knew killed, but for some reason, and the director came over and he was like, you have run this set too much. The words don't even mean anything to you anymore. You've said it too much. You've wrung all the life out of it. Tomorrow night, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm going to go to Cobb's. He's like, tomorrow night, go to see a movie, go have dinner with friends. Forget that you're doing this special. I guarantee you, when you get to the theater tomorrow night, it will all come rushing back to you and it will actually feel like this energized surprise. And that's what I do all the time now. Before my big set, the night before, I do nothing and I let it come rushing back to me. You know the set you're going to do. You've got it in your head. Believe that. The night before, on November 8th, don't even go see comedy. Go get food. Go shopping. Go do something mindless and stupid.
I heard shopping.
And then the day of, it, when you get there, it will rush back to you and you'll have this really energized energy on stage. Trust me, the day before, do nothing that has to do with the show.
Awesome. Pardon. I think that really relates with this Chinese saying, 小别胜新欢, it describes about love, like about lover. 小别胜新欢 means that a little break, a farewell from the woman, the man you love. You are together for 2 years, then you just don't see each other for a week. Then you come back to your lover is so passionate, is so great, is better than a new lover.
Yes. Well, then treat your comedy like a new lover. Take a break from your comedy that week.
Yeah.
Take a couple of nights off.
Yeah.
And also, when you take those nights off before your show, you're teaching your body and you're teaching your mind that kind of confidence of like, I know this stuff so well. I'll take a couple nights off beforehand. And when I get there, I know it.
Yeah.
And your body will get into that rhythm of, oh yeah, we're fine.
Yes.
And you'll bring that, you won't go on stage with that needy, I gotta get everything fucking perfect. Mm. You'll go, some of the stuff might not work. Let's see how it goes. Like,
yes.
There's nothing ballsier than that. When people are like, this comedian doesn't need us. Like,
that's great.
They're entertaining themselves. And then everyone has a great time.
Yes. After I kill, I'll be like, wait until I can learn how to speak English.
Yeah, exactly. But also, you'll be excited to be there because you've taken a couple nights off in comedy. You're like, oh, that's right, to get to go up. This is great.
Yeah.
So you'll have that energy and you'll be excited to see the audience.
Yes. They can feel it. The audience are so smart.
Yes.
They're like sharks. They can sniff blood.
They smell, blood is they the smell insecurity. Blood and fear. What day do you get to New York?
I'm actually going to be there at the 3rd, November 3rd, and I'll just be doing shows every night.
Well, the two nights before the 9th, don't do anything. 7th and 8th, go do anything but comedy.
Okay.
And then let it rush back to you, and you will not believe how excited, and you'll be surprised because you'll have taken a couple nights off from your set, and you're like, oh, fuck, I love this bit. Like, you will actually be excited to hear it.
Yeah, it's sort of like if I tour, I don't see my kids for a week. I realize they are cute.
Yes, exactly. And then you come home for a couple of days and go, oh yeah, I got to get back on the road. This is
yes, I know. People always ask me like, how can you be a single mother and be on the road all the time? You know, it's not hard if you don't care about them.
It's
good. It makes me a better mother.
This is such wonderful advice. Why isn't this on like a knitted on a little throw pillow?
Yeah.
It's easy to tour if you hate your kids. Like, yes. There you go.
And also,
live, laugh, love, hate your children.
And I remember like Winston and I, he's obsessed with Paw Patrol, the little thing.
My daughter loves
They love Paw Patrol. He knows all the puppies. He's so, there's a car blow up. And he's like, mommy, we have to call the rescue team. We have to call Paw Patrol. I said, do you see the car blow up? He said, yes. I said, the people got hurt, huh? It's painful. He goes, yes. I said, pause the TV, honey. He's like, what's wrong? I said, that's what happened to my vagina when I give birth to you. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry, mommy. I said, go get me some ice cream and rub my feet. He's like, rubbing my feet. He's like, I'm so sorry. I said, okay, enough. You can go back to watching it. I just keep like putting it back in his subconscious.
I love that. And I love that you pick your opportunities to go. You see how Vin Diesel just crashed that car?
Yes.
That was how you crashed out of me. Remember the way the car came through that wall?
Yeah.
That was how you came out of me. Now go get mommy an iced tea and some club crackers. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
You use every opportunity to point out.
Yeah, it works. It works. He cared about me. It's not official, but it will last for 15 years. When he's 15, Iroh started
really
at 15.
Got it. Yeah, exactly. You got to keep that. And now, what do you do in terms of like, because one thing I learned with my daughter was I didn't try to force the music that I loved onto her. Like, I just play the stuff I like, but I'm like, hey, you look like she. So, yeah, she loves Phoebe Bridgers and she loves Bleached and she loves, you know, a lot of new groups that I've never heard of, loves Taylor Swift, but then also loves the Ramones, loves Black Sabbath, loves Bowie. Like, her taste is all over the place because I've taught her, just listen, like whatever you like, no matter when it's from.
I think that is the best advice.
Yeah.
Because they resent us.
Yeah, and by the way,
when we want them to do something, they won't do it.
Yeah, and then she will listen to her music in the car, and some of these Taylor Swift songs are kind of good.
It's very catchy.
Like, not just catchy, but like,
but good. That's catch my feeling. Back to December?
Yes.
Whenever I hear it, sad songs make me happier.
But like, dark, like,
yeah.
Whoa, this girl has seen some shit.
She has the courage to write her feelings.
Yeah.
I hate it when people make fun of her because she read all her relationships. That's what you should write. Every time you devote your heart, they break your heart, you write about it.
Hell
That's
yeah.
how you get over it.
Yeah.
You don't, it's, she's not taking advantage. It's her life.
Yeah.
It's her life. And she's going to write about
the
it.
Lyrics
That's what
are
touches
like,
the heart.
Are dark. Like, she goes into some really amazing places. I mean, yes, there's a lot of pop stuff that, yes, it is very catchy.
Mm-hmm.
She knows how to write a catchy song. Look, there's certain groups, when my daughter was a baby and didn't know anything from music, all kids love the Beatles because it's just this, they're catchy as hell. Mm-hmm. They're trying not to be catchy, but they're catchy and there you go. Mm-hmm. So I think Taylor Swift is the same way. Like, it's not her fault that she writes catchy tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone that's like, yeah, they just write hit songs. Okay, stop. Writing hit songs is really hard to do.
That's
not the easy way to go through music.
It's like somebody, he's poor, but he just knows how to win the lottery.
Okay, that's not a slam on him. He knows how to do that. I mean, I'm always obsessed with groups, and she likes them too now, like groups like The Coup, Boutrelli's group The Coup, or there's a punk band called The Buzzcocks who want to be punk and want to be edgy, and they can't help writing hit tunes. Like, they write the catchiest. Like, The Buzzcocks, right at the height of punk rock, Sex Pistols, Clash, the catchiest, even when my daughter was a little baby, she just thought their stuff was, because it's just bouncy. And you can almost feel the disgust in their voice, like, I want to be punk so bad, but I wrote this great riff. What am I going to do? You know, so that kind of, some people can't help it.
They can't help.
That's what they write. They write catchy tunes. Not their fault.
Yeah, it's like there's a poet in your mind. You run. You like it has to, or you don't. You can't come. You're like, I can't come for 2 months. Let me just go back to basic.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, kids. You know, there's a thing in your mind where if you can't come, you got to switch.
Yeah, there's something wrong. You are trying to be something you are not.
What do your kids listen to? Right now, are you deciding the music or do they have tastes now?
My daughter, she wants what she wants. She likes rock.
Oh.
She likes, I don't know why, but she likes Janis Joplin. I don't know why.
Nice.
Whenever I listen to Janis Joplin, she's dancing.
Wow.
If I turn into something...
Because Janis Joplin has friggin' energy.
Yes, she screams and she's just deep. My daughter just dance. My son, he likes just like a cheerful basic songs. He likes the Paw Patrol hits. He likes he just like that kind of songs.
Yeah, when she was little, she liked Beatles and all the songs on Yo Gabba Gabba. But then she got older. Bowie now. She just, because of bands like Bleached, they have, like, she's reverse engineered herself into stuff like Black Sabbath and Zeppelin and Judas Priest because they're like a modern version of that. These two sisters from Silver Lake.
Wow.
This amazing band called Bleach. And again, another band, very much punk roots, and they cannot help writing the catchiest songs you've ever heard. Yeah. Like, they just write catchy songs. It's what they do. But they'll mention, like, Black. They're like, I listen to Sabbath. It's real. And I was like, what's Sabbath? I'm like, well, sweetie. And then I'll put on Paranoid. And now she loves Sabbath. So.
Yeah, classy is classy.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
I just really rethink about when you said that young people should be allowed to make some stupid mistakes and be forgiven.
Yes.
And there's a new Gen Z trend. We used to, like, in the 90s, my time, we have the girl boss, you know, like, the niche,
right,
our time, right? Girl boss, you know, lady boss. But now they have snail girls. The young Gen Z ladies, they were like, no, we are doing snail girls. Snail girls, they enjoy life first, happiness first, work second.
That's what I was talking about. They're rebelling against that no days off, grind, girl boss stuff. Like, no, I just want to be goofy.
I wanted to wear my PJs watching a Netflix show while I'm replying my emails.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
I want a pointless day with my friends.
Yeah.
We went to the mall. Why did you go to the mall? To look around? Did you buy anything?
Snail girls.
But we made a bunch of jokes and things were dumb. And then we lost our car. And then, like, that is so much more valuable.
They said, my boss' happiness is not my priority. That's what the snail girls.
Yes.
But the shocking news I found out, the snail girl spokesperson, she talked about on TikTok, is a Chinese American girl. So her mom died, I think.
And also because she's rebelling.
Rebelling because there's Chinese American value. I mean, maybe she's Taiwanese because they learn some freedom to become lazy.
Mm-hmm.
That could also...
Listen to you. You can't help yourself. And they become lazy. And I will never let that happen.
I want the girls, like even the Asian girls, to just be lazy for a while. Just like thinking, when you're a little lazy, you have a day for yourself. You realize, I don't have to prove to my mom and my father and my brothers. I can just be anything.
And laziness, leads to really amazing creativity. Some of the best songs and jokes you've ever had were from someone going, there's nothing going on, and trying to find a way to alleviate that boredom rather than having every moment scheduled.
I think so. I think about the movie Lady Bird.
One of my daughter's favorites. She loves Lady Bird.
The movie hit, even was a huge hit in China. It's because,
really?
Yes, it's because it's a moment when her mom's like, you know, you can be better. You are going to become the best version. She's like, how about this is the best version of myself right now?
Yeah. Yes.
And that is so powerful for girls to be liberated, because the girls got to love themselves when they just got out of the shower, not brushing their teeth.
Yes.
Have the fucking zits all over their face.
And you,
and you got a period of bloated and still be like, that's me and I like this.
Yeah. And you got to love hanging out with yourself when you're in sweatpants and no makeup and have nothing on your calendar to do.
Yeah.
There's like, I don't even have anything I want to watch on TV right now. I'm going to look at the wall and just think about shit and see where that takes me right now.
That's amazing.
And I look, I still have problems with that. Again, when I'm always like, I voraciously watch movies, I voraciously read, I always want my brain to be doing something. And a couple weeks ago, I had a couple of days where I didn't do anything and it was so valuable. Thanks, COVID. But COVID made me lie face down and do nothing. And I needed it.
I think it's so important for us to, I'm in therapy right now. And as a Chinese person, I'm pretty shocked that I'm benefiting so much from therapy.
Is your therapist Chinese?
She's a Persian American therapist.
Okay.
She's very strong, firm, and she knows artists.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working with her since January after my divorce finalized.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's been changing my life. She didn't tell me to get sober. I just learned to love myself more. I decided to get sober. And she was very shocked and happy that I choose to do this. It's just that she didn't tell me to do it, but she told me to look inside to just learn about myself. And I just really think a lot of amazing artists, you know, sometimes they still felt like if I resolve my pain, maybe I won't be creative.
That is such a myth. That is the dumb. Any great art that comes out of trauma and stuff like that is most often, there are exceptions to that rule. Fleetwood Mac's Rumors was written during the absolute worst part of all their lives. But for the most part, that stuff gets written after you have come out the other side of the trauma and can look back on it and deal with it. When you're dealing with trauma, you can't, it's hard to be creative because there's so much energy is going to dealing with the trauma. So don't fall in love with all that nonsense of like, man, I need my edge stuff. I got to burn stuff down. No, you don't. Just chill the hell out. No, you don't.
I really believe like as a comedian, you are a philosopher of society. And
I'm trying.
Your mind is like an athlete, the way you work. Because and I one of my favorite comedian is Joan Rivers.
And that, did she go through, she went through a really.
And I felt she did not learn to truly, truly love how extremely beautiful she was.
And also especially you saw the documentary, right?
Yeah.
Remember when she's like, this is fear.
I was thinking about it. Yeah.
It's like she couldn't give herself a day just to wander around and just do nothing. What would have come out of that? Because she had such a nimble brain, the way she thought about life. But she also, I think at the end, and I kind of agree, I mean, I defend her for this. Yeah, a lot of her stuff wasn't politically incorrect, wasn't woke near the end of her life. But it's like, that woman laid down on barbed wire so you guys could run safely across her back and then say that. It's like, I think she gets a pass.
She does.
She took every bullet, every grenade. I don't think you can cancel her.
You just
can't. She brought this world into being, but much like John Wayne in that movie, The Searchers, she created a world that ultimately she then didn't belong in or felt like she didn't belong in and got really, like there's something very bittersweet about that.
Yeah, the mainstream Oscars never let her host. She was more deserving.
If she had hosted the Oscars, it would have been hilarious. It would have been talked about for months afterwards, and then they'd have her back the next year, and the ratings would be insane.
Yeah,
because they're like, what the hell is she going to do?
Yeah,
yeah. She didn't care.
I
what are you going to not let me be in movies? They don't let me be in movies. I tour and people love me. Yeah, she's. I never got to see her live, but friends of mine that got to see her live were like, it was absolutely no brake pedal, all gas.
Amazing.
Couldn't believe it.
I remember she said one thing. She said, as a comedian, she said, I'm only as good as my last show.
Yeah, but again, I think that I don't like that for her. I wish that she had had a little bit of breathing room to go, yeah, that show wasn't great, but I'm still Joan fucking Rivers. Like,
yeah.
I don't think she, but again, she was the first through the door. So she had that, always had a cliff at her back. And I wish that she had gotten to a point where she would have been allowed to kick back and see where that took her.
She's like a Hillary.
And reinvent. Yeah. Like and Hillary. Exactly. Yeah.
You don't allow yourself to be a human.
People yeah. Yeah. And she more than anyone I thought really deserved that.
She did.
Have some time where you can just mess around and be, you know, although in a weird way, even though she didn't have that in her professional life, she did for 1 hour on stage, she said whatever was on her mind without ever thinking twice about anything. And that's something that a lot of us, I know I don't have that. And everyone who says, I don't care, you're lying. It's infected all of our brains. We've got to push through it to get to the other side of it. But yeah, I wish she had had more chill time off stage.
Yeah, I really.
Because she deserved it.
Yes.
She really deserved it.
Who is your favorite comedian? Comedians.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, before I started, here's what's weird. Before I started, it was like Carlin and Pryor and Steve Martin. I thought Steve Martin is a really underrated stand-up comedian for what he was doing at the time. Because George Carlin was amazing at pointing out, here's how we lie to ourselves with words. And then Richard Pryor was like, here's how we lie to ourselves, about our weaknesses, about our – and it was just stunning to watch it because people were laughing but also gasping because he's basically telling on the audience.
Yeah.
Telling on everybody. But then Steve Martin did this thing where he's like, no matter how revolutionary a comedian I am – I'm still in showbiz. At my core, I'm phony. I am trying to get wealth and fame. There is a phoniness to this. And he was so making fun of that on this weird meta level that I don't think people appreciate how bizarre and how prophetic he was as to where we were going as a culture. We're all in showbiz now. Everyone knows how to comport themselves. And he was playing this mutant showbiz creep of someone that all they are is showbiz. Mm-hmm. But it was hilarious. But then once I started doing comedy, I'm sure this happened to you too. It's all my friends. It's everyone that I know are my favorites. People like, you know, Dave Attell, people like, you know, Brian Posehn, Maria Bamford, and, you know, Sarah Silverman, Andy Kindler, Todd Glass, like the people that I hang out with, Blaine Kapach, just like huge influences because they're my influences every day. Every day I'm texting with them and we're talking about stuff and trading jokes and that's where I get my inspiration from.
That's so brilliant. Yeah. So beautiful.
Yeah. So that's a big deal for me.
That's amazing. I felt like with Steve Martin, do you think he's not, he's obviously he's great, but like, do you think he's not as well regarded as the other greats because he was too good at his business?
Well, he got to a point and it's weird, whereas because think about how Richard Pryor was exploring human frailty and his own demons. Well, and there's an endless supply of that. You know, the world was never going to outpace him in terms of raw honesty. George Carlin was looking at language. Well, language was always mutating and he was always able to look at that. Steve Martin was making fun of the artifice of show business and that artifice outpaced him to the point where it didn't seem weird what he was doing anymore because everybody was acting that way. Everybody was being ironic and self-referential. So he was like, I've said what I needed to say.
Yeah.
Like the world is – I was making fun of a world that I hope wouldn't come to pass and now it's come to pass. So what's the point?
I see.
It was like with Martin Mull's show. Martin Mull did this amazing show in the 70s called Fernwood Tonight, making fun of like daytime, like local talk shows and how insane they were. And then I remember someone telling him, you should bring Fernwood Tonight back. He's like, to do what? Compete with Jerry Springer? Like I can't make fun of this stuff anymore. It's already outpaced me. Mm-hmm. They've done me one better. What can I say now? Like I said what I needed to say. I don't know what to, although here's what's awesome about Steve Martin. Yes, he stopped doing stand-up, but he kept doing brilliant bits on talk shows. He did stand up. He just hid it in his talk show appearances. I know this sounds really pretentious.
He's a magician.
He's a magician, but also like would make, he then was like, it doesn't make any sense to me to make fun of this on stage, but I can make fun of the phoniness of the talk show and how, yeah, we're acting like we're chatting, but we're here just promoting shit.
Yeah.
Like I don't actually care. Mm-hmm. Like I'm here to promote my movie. So all of his like, when he would panel on a talk show, that was destination TV. When I was a comedian, like, oh my God, what's he going to do? He's going to do something amazing with it. I wish there was somebody like either Rhino Video or Criterion put together a collection of all of his panel segments on Letterman and to Tonight Show.
That's brilliant.
Some of the most brilliant comedy you'll ever see.
That's amazing.
And like really mapped out brilliant bits, but done as if he's doing just a panel.
Wow.
That's the funniest thing of stuff I've ever seen.
Exciting.
Yeah.
I have an idea. I felt that, you know, George Carlin, his whole career, he was working very hard trying to get in movies, get his movie made. It really never really happened. But it pushed him into our George Carlin, the George Carlin we know, because he's kept his stand up it to a level that is
so
amazing.
He went through a thing. And a lot of comedians don't come back from this, and he came roaring back, where he was the cutting edge. He was the gold standard all through the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And then people started making fun of him because he sort of started to become a parody of himself. SCTV made fun of him. People were, you know, pointing out, like, he's just talking about world peace and, like, it was getting – and so then he had to – and then – I think Sam Kinison came along and really reminded him of like, oh, this is what raw, the stuff I was doing. And he, instead of backing down or just digging in his heels harder on what he was doing, he stripped away what had made him comfortable and then came back with that. I think is it doing it in New York or something? But there was some special.
Carlin at Carnegie?
No, Carlin at Carnegie was earlier when he was like still. Uh-huh. Then he went through that in the 80s, he was kind of lost. And then in the early 90s, that whole thing about we don't need to save the planet. The planet's going to be fine without us. And it was
less is worth losing.
Yes. Yeah. That kind of stuff was when he then. And that's, you know, a lot of artists don't reinvent themselves that way or it's because that's scary.
It's very scary.
And it's also scary to go through that thing of like, I'm not relevant anymore. He had to go through that thing for a while where he's like, oh yeah, George Carlin, that was 70s are over, dude. Bye. You know, like.
It's very sad.
And it's scary.
It is very scary.
What the fuck do I do now? And then, boy, did he come roaring back.
It's amazing to see how like Joan Rivers, she also reinvented herself after Fox was canceled. Her husband killed himself. Oh, people don't want to hire her because she's a widow. Like, how can you be funny? You are a widow. Also, like, she was blacklisted by
Carson. Yeah, I mean,
it was petty. She's not. She's a woman. She can't compete with you in other. I mean, women can be successful, but like, she's not taking your job.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
She's not going to take your job.
She's not taking your job. She's a Jewish lady. She's doing her thing. It's amazing to see somebody who's so powerful so petty. It's just shocking to see.
Yeah, it was sometimes, and that's a big thing about having a career. I'm gonna paraphrase a writer, Harlan Ellison. Anyone can become a comedian. That's easy. Staying a comedian is hard. Oh, having a long, long career, that's very difficult to do.
There's a Chinese saying, "打江山容易，做江山难." It is easy to basically to win a war and launch an empire and become an emperor. The hard part is how can you stay ruling this nation for decades, century to come? That is the hard part.
Same thing.
Everybody can fight, can become a king for a day.
Everybody can be the new thing. Everybody can be the new thing, taking down the old stuff, but can you sustain that? And a lot of people, I think they get high on the idea. I did too, of like, I'm the new thing. Well, you're not the new thing forever. So you have to now, how do you segue into a career of longevity? You know, John Waters is a great example. John Waters was the most edgy, most outrageous filmmaker, Pink Flamingos and Female Trouble. And then he realized, wait a minute, I can't be on the edge forever because the stuff that I used to do that was so shocking is now in like PG movies. Mm-hmm. So now he's become America's beloved gay uncle and he curates art and films and books and has even more influence than he did before.
That's amazing.
Because he accepted, like, he's growing old gracefully. Yes. I'm not the enfant terrible forever.
Yeah, that's why it takes a good human being to become a good artist, because yeah. you have to be humble.
You can't white knuckle your youth.
Yeah, you have to be humble about you are not as yeah. special as you think.
And also be excited when new stuff comes along. Don't yeah. be angry. Like, I see these comedians coming up, these new voices, yes, they're using TikTok and Instagram. That makes me excited because it means people still care about comedy. They don't think comedy's lame and they want to do really well at it. I don't resent people that are coming up that have better points of view and more relevant points of view than me. I don't want to be the last relevant thing in my line of work, because then I've got decades to live where everything's boring. I don't want that. I want people to keep coming along and being exciting. When hip hop first showed up on the scene, John Entwistle from The Who was talking to Pete Townsend. He's like, I don't get hip hop. I don't get this. And Pete Townsend said, it's not our job to get it. It's our job to now get out of the way. We had our time. Wow. We were the new thing, tearing everything apart, and we were the dangerous thing. And now we're 40-year-old millionaires. Let's enjoy our lives. We can still make music and let them be the next thing. What they're doing is vital.
That's very powerful.
Yeah. So I don't care. I don't hope I die before I get old. I hope I know when to get the fuck out of the way for the new and enjoy the new.
Oh my God. I'm crying. My eyes are small, but there's tears. I promise you. This is so powerful, Pat. And you've been so supportive, because a lot of people don't respect me because they think I'm a TikTok comedian, but I don't post makeup studio videos on TikTok. I yeah. post my jokes. And I'm just, it means the world that every you've comedian, always been so respectful and so nice to me and supportive of my career. And for like one of my show at the Improv, you helped me share the news, the one we did for...
That was a really good, that awesome. Lineup was insane.
Yes. It's,
I was so, I was either traveling. What was I doing that I couldn't do that show? I remember that very clearly.
You were touring.
I think I was touring. Yeah. And I was like, fuck. That's one of those things where there's so many great shows that go on locally, but I have to check myself and go, hey, it's good that you're on the road. Like, it's not that you're missing it because you just want to stay home and watch TV. You're traveling. You're still doing your craft. You're not missing it because, you know, but there are those shows where I'm like, oh, why aren't I here doing this?
I would love to be on your Largo show.
That's not good.
To be your new friends.
No, absolutely.
I can get you the new iPhone.
We have plenty of shows coming up. Absolutely.
I would love to get to just be around you and your friends. I love Sarah Silverman. She's just
she rules.
Phenomenon. She's just
so funny.
She's the best.
Talk about someone who really has stuck to her guns, but also has gone, oh yeah, some of the stuff that I did hasn't aged all that well. I'll write other stuff. Like, she's not precious about it.
Yes.
Which again, very scary, ballsy thing to do.
Yeah, and she, the beauty about it, like, because she's such a great writer, she just keep writing. You know,
yeah,
that's the power, is like when you can write your own things.
By the way, any comedian giving you shit for being on TikTok, if they had TikTok in their day, would have totally used it.
Yeah.
If I had had TikTok, I absolutely would have used it. So don't listen to anyone that's like, can't believe these people using TikTok. Use whatever you have.
And they have their own account.
Of course they do.
And doing the same thing I'm doing.
Oh my God. Anyway. And I need to go to the dentist.
Go. Let's go.
No, not you.
I can drive you.
You do not want to.
I can drive you. Uber Karen will drive you. I just want to thank you so much for being here, Pat. It means the world that you are here, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and kindness.
I hope I help somebody
and to the world.
Thank you.
I love you.